A new book looks at an environmental disaster that happened 75 years ago and still resonates today. Donora Death Fog chronicles the events that led to the 1948 smog that sickened thousands and killed 21 people, according to author Andy McPhee. He writes that the small town of Donora, Pennsylvania, was founded at the turn of the 20th century expressly for industry. An entire town, stores, schools, churches, and bars, rose up to support the complex of furnaces, mills, and plants that made all kinds of products, like steel wire and zinc to galvanize nails. Fog wasn't unusual in the town, built along a horseshoe curve in the Monongahela River, south of Pittsburgh. But my first question for McPhee was, what made it deadly this time?
The temperature inversions we're accustomed to those. We have those in the fall. It's when a layer of warm air sits over a layer of cool air closer to the ground. Normally that blows off. The sun heats the air and the cool air rises up and the fog blows off. Well, that didn't happen here for a couple of reasons. One, the fog was very thick to begin with because of all the smoke from the mills. But secondly, there was no wind. There was hardly a breath of fresh air anywhere in the entire region, from Virginia all the way up to New York. Because the mills kept pumping out effluents, and those effluents contain a wide variety of what we know now are deadly chemicals. So as those effluents built up, as the mills kept working, that lid kept all of those chemicals in the air, getting more and more concentrated. We're talking about millions of pounds of effluents over a period of time. Once that 6 days of smog hit, it's like just breathing in chemicals through a gas mask. It's basically what it was.
The fog formed on a Tuesday. It settled down in Donora on Wednesday, and people went about their business. When did people start to realize that this wasn't a typical fog event that they were kind of used to?
The physicians began to become aware. The firefighters began to become aware. Certainly, I talk about Rudolf Schwerer, who was one of the funeral directors, one of the morticians in town. And he realized fairly early on, he's got three deaths in the span of an hour and a half or whatever, that there's something really bad going on. They didn't know what it was. But the regular people, yeah, it's a smog. I mean, it was a fog. Smog wasn't really a term used then. It was a fog, and they've been living through fogs for years. So they just went about their daily lives. They had a Halloween parade. They had the Smog Bowl, which was a big game between Monongahela and Donora.
A big football game.
Big football game, yes. And hundreds of people went to the game at the top of the hill in Donora.
You're right. Eight doctors rushed around town in the smog. They could hardly see in front of their faces where they were going. The fire department tried to help people at their homes with oxygen. Some people made it to the hospital. 6,000 people became ill, it's estimated, and 21 died. And it was a really scary experience for the people who were sick and those who died. Can you say a little bit about, you know, what they went through and what it was like to breathe in that kind of air?
Yes. I was a nurse for a long time, and I took care of patients with chronic lung disease, chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, we call it now, and emphysema, and asthma, and heart failure, and heart attacks, and all those kinds of things. So I have a sense of what these people must have been going through, and what happens in a situation like that, they basically become asphyxiated. There's nowhere near enough oxygen that they're getting to support their body. And if their heart is weak, and a number of them had weak hearts, a sequence of events that occurs as the body begins to shut down. Initially, there's a rapid breathing, rapid pulse rate, which is the body trying to get enough oxygen to its cells, particularly the brain cells and the heart cells. And eventually, the body just kind of runs out of steam. And slowly the kidneys start to fail, the liver starts to fail, the lungs start to fail, and then the pulse rate drops and the breathing slows, and eventually there's just silence. The very end is peaceful, but the part to get there is terrifying.
The people who died were all over 50 years old, many over 60. Many of the people who died were immigrants who had already retired from the industries that they came here to work for. How did their age and their health play into the story about the smog?
The most common myth, I think, and certainly is a rationalization of a number of residents that I spoke with. The rationalization was, well, these were sickly people anyway. And they're really all older. Well, 55 was one of the youngest ones. 52, they're not that old. They had had a hard life because of where they worked in the mills, but these were not aged people. Once you get up in the 60s and 70s at that time, now we got a different ballgame. Now you have heart issues hitting people. But they've been breathing this smoke for so long, so that was part of it, absolutely. But there are other people who had not been sick. It's an individual thing how people respond to pollutants and these toxins. And we know way more about that now than we used to. There was also a denial of the root cause. They didn't blame the mills. Some of them absolutely did and held a grudge until the last days of their life. And their sons and daughters hold grudges as well. But many of them never faulted the mills because that was their livelihood. That was how they survived.
What did the mill owners and operators do during the smog event?
The mill, the supervisors in the mill, the owners were in Pittsburgh. The supervisors were hearing stuff from other people, and they would go out to check. The main person for the zinc mill was a guy named Milton Mercer Neal. And he went around the zinc works looking at the dispersion of smoke from the smokestacks. And he didn't see anything wrong with the dispersion. He was expecting, I think, to see it fall from the smokestacks or to not move. He said it just went up like it normally did, which cannot have happened. There was pressure on him not to shut the mills down. And let me clear up something that some people think they should have just shut the furnaces down. You can't shut the furnaces down without the furnaces basically either exploding or breaking down completely. But what they did was they banked the furnaces. That is, they slowed down the amount of raw ore that they were putting in so that it brought the temperature down and it brought the amount of pollution, smoke, going out of it. But they didn't bank those until Sunday morning at 6 o'clock, which by then was too late.
How did the state and federal government respond after the smog lifted?
There was the Public Health Service sent a team of investigators. They didn't start arriving there until Sunday morning. But they did conduct a fairly wide-ranging investigation. The nurses came out and spoke with a few hundred patients. They did autopsies on four of the individuals who died. They measured the effluence of toxins all over the valley. They couldn't mirror, though, the circumstances. So they had to rely on sort of extrapolations, and this is what we measured up here, and this is what we measured down there. And these toxins came from this mill in this quantity. So they did actually a fairly good job of that. What they failed to do, in my estimation, was provide strong enough recommendations to make the mills do stuff, to fix things.
How did the 1948 Denora smog lead to air pollution action or protections in the U.S.?
Well, it was a really good timing because it happened on Halloween weekend. And lo and behold, the presidential election was held the following week. And Harry Truman won in a surprise victory. And he became president. So this was one of the first things that landed on his desk. So within a couple of years, he had called for the first conference on air pollution. And that conference was the first time the government had said, listen, this is something we need to study. So get going. And 3 years later came the first Clean Air Act. As we know it, it was called the Anti-Pollution Control Act of 1955. It didn't have much teeth. It really said, you need to start studying this, public health, you need to start doing that, industrial hygiene officials, you need to start looking into this. It's a first step. There were a few revisions of that bill in the 60s, but the teeth really didn't get into it until Richard Nixon signed the bill in 1970, called the Clean Air Act.
What's the lesson for us today from what happened there in Tenora?
The lesson, I think, is to pay attention sooner to issues and to fix things when you see them wrong, not to wait. You know, we have a tendency in this country not to make any changes until something really bad happens. And then you get an Ohio train derailment. We have to pay attention to these environmental disasters, environmental issues, and work diligently to address them.
Before they become a disaster.
Yes.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you. I appreciate the call and talking with you.
Andy McPhee has written 3 books for young adults, is a health and science writer and editor, retired nurse, and the author of the new book, Denora Death Fog, Clean Air and the Tragedy of a Pennsylvania Mill Town, from the University of Pittsburgh Press. There's more, including a story about the Smog Museum in Denora that tells the story of the town and disaster. That's at AlleghenyFront.org.